Welcome to Grumpy Strategists, episode 60. I'm your host, SAA's Michael Shoebridge, and I'm joined here in the SAA bunker deep in the Brindabella Hills by Dr. Marcus Hellyer, the head of research. Marcus, we've got the emergency lighting on, but I can still make you out there.
Well, I mean, we've got our 1965-era Hewlett-Packard computer working here. Very fine piece of technology, but it does use a lot of power. So we've had to put life support systems on standby.
All that, you know, silicon chip nonsense. Valves are the only real way to be sure you've got the sun.
Exactly. And are we dependent on, you know, Taiwanese chips?
No.
Are we dependent on Chinese chips?
No.
We are dependent on a guy in Uzbekistan who is the only person left in the world who can make the valves for the computer. But that's another story.
Well, but his dad worked at Philips and AWA here in Australia to make the original valves. Mm-hmm. And the fact that his son is back in their homeland, Uzbekistan, well, that's just what you get. And a call out to Sergey and his family. Lovely people. Thanks very much for the support that you've got.
Love your valves. Yeah. Anyway, we've fired up the Hewlett-Packard because the portfolio additional estimate statements have come out. So for those at home who don't follow defence budget issues in as much detail as we do, the PAES is effectively the mid-year budget update. So we can see whether spending targets have changed, see how the department is tracking against hitting its spending targets. So it gives us a little bit of information to see, A, whether the plan has changed, and B, how defence is tracking against the plan.
How many pages is this document?
It's a mere 224, I believe.
It's got to be more than that, because I know the glossary goes at least onto page 229.
Okay, well, over 200 pages.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't want to destroy a forest by printing out the whole thing, so I have to say I don't complete paper copy in front of me.
All right, well, let's get into it. So this will be before the Parliament. It's really a blockbuster, very like Melania. So there's going to be a lot of people interested in an early review, and that's why we've got this episode, to give that breaking news, our assessment, our review of this blockbuster defence release.
Well, tomorrow is Senate estimates, so the Defence Foreign Affairs and Trade Committee will be holding hearings. Maybe we'll raise a few questions here, and if any senators are out there listening, maybe they can ask those questions of the esteemed defence officials.
Now, there's actually some good news in this document.
There is good news around ADF personnel. You know, so all of the naysayers, Shoebridge, eat your words, because defence has actually turned it around.
Okay, well, look, let me know. I'm open for good news. You know, when the facts change, I change my mind. So if the ADF workforce has grown, that is good news.
It has. Okay, so the big picture story, which we've talked about before, is White Paper 2016 put the ADF on a growth path. The 2020 Defence Strategic Update added more people to that growth path. So on paper, it was on a growth trajectory.
Yep.
However, actual numbers essentially remained pretty flat for over a decade.
Yep.
And so as the paper target kept growing and
the
actual numbers didn't grow, the gap got bigger and bigger. And so in the budget papers at the start of this financial year, essentially the government said, enough's enough, that gap keeps growing. What we're going to do is kind of, in a sense, accept temporary defeat, and we're going to drop the target. So they dropped the target by nearly 5,000 people.
It's just a tactical retreat.
A tactical retreat. They aren't going to get there in the long run.
Yep.
Okay, so the target came down dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The good news is defence is going to exceed that target, admittedly reduced target.
Overachieve against the lower target.
Yes, by about 2,338 personnel.
Well, that is a big watch of people.
That's a big watch of people. But the real good news is it's not that they're just overachieving against a reduced target. They're actually growing against where they were a year ago.
Right, so then the total number of people in the ADF is now going up.
Yes.
Not bumping along.
It is not just an artifact of a reduced target.
So what's it look like?
Well, okay, noting that the numbers in the PAES are still a prediction.
Yep.
They're not the final outcome from the year, but if they achieve that prediction, they'll have grown by about 2,500 since last year.
All right. Now, the service that was in the biggest hole was the Army.
Yeah, the Army was in a big hole.
Is the Army one of the biggest improver here?
Yeah, so the Army finally, so the Army got down to, you know, around about 3,500 short of where it needed to be. So it was over 10% short of where it needed to be. They have finally managed to turn it around, and so it looks like they're going to grow by about 1,000 on where they were. Okay. Air Force has always been in pretty good shape, and sort of Navy's been somewhere in between. Yeah. Not as bad as Army, not as good as Air Force, but they're all heading in the right direction, and in fact Air Force will be quite a bit over. So it's all good news.
In fact, they're going to be over 60,000. Well, for the first time.
For the first time in a long time.
And they'll be up to about, 61,000 in 26-27?
Yeah, so if they hit this year's target, they'll be up to about 61,700.
Right.
Projecting forward, you know, and again, Defence has projected numbers forward in the personnel space and not got there.
Yes.
But they do seem to be projecting that they will kind of get back on track. So they reduce the targets, and sort of over the long term, they think they're going to get back to where they would have been.
I'm a little sceptical there.
I think you're entitled to remain sceptical.
There's
Is 1 year.
Yes.
This is 1 year. So the issue is, can they keep it going?
There's a little bit of wiggle room in that future target too. Like, I remember the original plan was 69,000 by 2030, yep. 80,000 by 2040.
Yes, that was the previous government's plan. Yeah. It's not entirely clear what the current government's
plan is. The 80,000 seems to have disappeared from any documents, and the 69,000, the time frame is now blurred up around the early 2030s. So there's a little bit of Pons commercial blurring going on here. But let's celebrate the good news. Now, there's probably a couple of reasons for this increase. One, I hear that waivers against recruitment requirements are up. So, you know, if you've got things that would have made you unacceptable to join the military before, a lot of these things are being waived. And some of that's very good, because some of those waivers, I think, were very silly. So there's that. But there's also the fact that there's a lot of money being pushed at people to stay, like a $40,000 continuation bonus if you sign up for 3 more years.
I think another thing is my understanding is the current outsource recruitment contract has been in place for about 3 years, so the people sort of running defense recruitment, so on the industry side, have been at the job for 3 years now, so hopefully, you know, there's lessons flowing through there. But the bottom line is this is good. But again, first year, still a ways to go. But congratulations to General Natasha Fox, the head of AEF personnel, and her team. Let's hope Defence can keep it going.
Now, there's a boomerang effect here.
There is a boomerang effect.
All good news comes with a catch.
Yes.
And that sort of brings us to the top line of the defence budget.
Now we'll talk dollars. So
I'd just say you've got workforce, you've got capital, and you've got operational and sustainment funding.
Well, if you got a lot more people, you have to pay them.
Yeah.
So this year, defence's workforce bill has grown by $400 million since the budget statements. You know, so you got more people, you got to pay them. Now you go, all right, that's good. You know, what's the money there for? Well, it's to actually pay ADF people to generate capability. Yep. But over the last decade, I think one of the things we can say is that because Defence has consistently met its personnel targets, it's actually freed up a bunch of cash.
Yeah, consistently not met its
targets. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's had funding for a workforce size that it hasn't had.
Yeah.
So it's been able to use that money for other things.
Yeah, so now that spare cash isn't going to be available. Okay, so let's move on to the big picture. And there's some, normally in the PAES, it's sort of updates, not too much going on. You can see a certain project maybe underspending or overspending, but
it's a little bit of polishing normally, isn't it?
But there's actually some big muscle movements here. And some of them, I think, are ones we again, if we're eating humble pie, would go, that's a good thing. That's what we actually have been wanting to see. Yep. And so in particular, a lot of money is coming forward. So again, if we take a step back, look at the big picture, the current government has been talking about its, quote, historic budget increases.
Yeah, yeah. Don't give me started.
You know, sort of $57 billion tipped in here and 5.7 tipped in there, and all that kind of stuff.
The problem was a lot of that was backloaded.
Yes, it was all backloaded and virtually nothing at the front end of the forward estimates.
Yeah, so i.e. real money
in the current budget year and the next budget year.
Yeah.
Again, that has changed. So if we look at the portfolio budget statements, and if people want to see this in black and white, it's table 6 on page 16 of the PAES, which you can download from Defence's
website.
Now,
most listeners are going to have to leaf back because they'll be further into the document by this stage. Then what page is it again?
16.
16, yeah. So bring yourselves back to page 16.
So everybody. Which is the budget measures table or the variations table. And what we can see there's a little footnote, footnote H, that says they have reprofiled $2 billion forward. So from the back end of the forward estimates, so from 27-28, they've moved that forward to 25-26. In
that
fact,
is
into
big,
this budget
big
year.
Muscle movement.
Yeah.
$2 billion brought from the back end of the forward estimates, the late years, to the current year.
Yep. And that is, according to the document, to support increased preparedness and capability acquisition within the integrated investment program. So apparently $2 billion upfront for capability, which sounds like a good thing. It's the sort of thing that we've been saying needs to be done.
Well, if you're in a rapidly deteriorating strategic environment, you need to be spending rapidly to get more military power. Yep, so
and
that sounds good.
Similarly, another big reprofiling. So funds for the nuclear-powered submarine program have been brought forward. So $1.2 billion from 27-28 and 28-29 into 25-26 and 26-27. So from $1.2 billion from the back 2 years of the forward estimates into the front 2 years of the forward estimates. So you go, gosh, that's works out at probably about $2.5 billion in this year
forward
in this year
to
alone.
This year. Well, I mean, that's interesting. So this is like a toothpaste tube, isn't it? It's money that was planned to be spent over the period of the forward estimates years, but instead of it being spent at the back end, it's being squirted forward to the front end. That means there's a net reduction in those later years at this point.
Yes. Well, so here's the thing. So we would say that's good.
Yep.
That's good.
Yep.
But there is some badness here as well. Yes, as you point out, those two back years now have less money. Sure, that makes sense. You take their money and move forward.
Yep.
But when we look at the forward estimates overall, so the next 4 years overall.
So the total defence spend over the next 4 years
is actually decreasing.
Okay, so it's not just shifting stuff around in the bucket.
No.
It's moving stuff out of the bucket.
Well, yes, defence is actually losing money. And again, this is not me. This is not my interpretation. This is in black and white in table 6. So if you go down to the very bottom, and the total impact on defence funding is actually negative $2,677 million. So about
Hang on.
$2.7 billion, roughly.
Right. So the good news is there's $2 billion brought forward for preparedness and capability. Is that an in addition, the extra money for nuclear-powered submarines?
Or yes, that's in addition to the $1.2 being brought forward for subs.
So we're getting about $3.2 earlier spend.
Yes.
But then we've got $2.677 billion going out the back door, out of the budget.
It's evaporating.
Net reduction.
Yeah, it's evaporating.
Right.
Yeah. Now, some of that is kind of, we could call legit. So it's the infamous foreign exchange adjustment.
Yeah, yeah.
So people may be aware of the no win, no loss principle. So if the Aussie dollar goes up, defence gets less dollars because it doesn't need as many to buy stuff from overseas. If the Aussie dollar goes down, defence gets more money.
So changes for foreign exchange really aren't so important because it maintains the purchasing power
either way. So about $780 million of that 2.7 roughly of money that's gone is foreign exchange.
So we're still dealing with about $1.9 billion reduction in the planned total spend over the next 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a headline to me because the budget's meant to be going up.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised no one's picked up on this because the PAS has been out for a while.
Well, I can tell you why. It's an impenetrable document. It isn't written to provide public information. The accounting standards that the government has are quite obscure, and that means you can't see simple cash flow and capital spend. And then the tables in this defence document are perversely seemingly disparate and unrelated. So you can't add up numbers across different tables. The categories are all different and they shift.
Correct. It is an accounting document written by accountants for other accountants to meet an accounting standard.
So a call out again to Sergei, help us maintain the Hewlett-Packard SAA supercomputer.
Readers might be able to hear the whirring. So that is the hamsters generating the energy to keep the valves cranking out this analysis. So
purebred Brindabellan hamsters, by the way. I mean, these, you will not get a more powerful. And those hamsters, they can spin that wheel all day.
And of course, when World War III comes and we go into lockdown, they are very tasty.
Yes. Yeah, well, we've got to keep enough to keep the lights on, but we've got to have a good meal.
So what is the rest of the money that has evaporated? Well, it is mainly that classic efficiency dividend.
Hasn't defense been immune from efficiency dividends as part of the budget process for years? So this is a big shift if they're having to be offering up an efficiency dividend. That's something that places like the National Gallery have been sort of hamstrung by.
So Dickie Miles has not been able to fend off his colleagues in the economics portfolio. Mm. So there is a line here called savings from external labour and non-wage expenses. In plain English, that is the dividend that defence will hopefully reap by essentially replacing external contractors with internal public servants.
That's interesting because I note that the public service workforce is not growing super rapidly, is it?
Growing a bit.
But not by enough to save $1.9 billion on the wage gap between public servants and contractors.
Okay, so the number over the forward estimates is about $1.55 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many
of savings out of the contractors and other?
Yeah, that's the amount of money the defence is having to hand back to consolidated revenue. Now, how many contractors is that? I don't know, but yes, this defence's public service workforce is growing a bit, but it's not growing a lot. So the people who are there are going to be pretty busy. But anyway, I find it very curious timing. So at a time when the government is saying it's the most complex, dangerous strategic circumstances since World War II, and they're also copping a lot of pressure from the Trump administration to increase spending, they're actually reducing defense spending. Now, you might say, well, the net capability effect is zero because we're replacing contractors with cheaper public servants. We're still getting the job done.
Mm.
I would be arguing, well, if you freed up $1.5 billion in the portfolio, I'd be sinking that into capability. But
it's like the defence estate fire sale the government wants to have. That any savings there are not going into capability. They're going into more property sales. Here, the Treasury has managed to get defence to hand over efficiency savings of about $1.5 billion at a time when there's an urgent need to increase our military power. I just think that does not make sense in our national security environment. But I tell you what, it makes sense in the broader government spending environment because there's enormous and growing pressure on the federal government to reduce government spending.
Correct.
And this is the Treasurer saying, Dickie, you're on the hook for some of it, buddy boy.
Everybody's got to do their bit.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to do their bit. So,
but it makes me think there's a real, like, I'd put $53 on the possibility of there being a sizable increase in the defence budget in this May budget. I think I've just lost that money because it'd be very weird, wouldn't it? The government is announcing, well, they're not announcing, but they have taken to Parliament a revised defence plan that has the defence budget going down by $2.677 billion over the next 4 years, they're hardly likely, I think, in May to come out with a defence budget that says I'm going to spend 3% on GDP early.
Well, okay, so as we all know, they're working on then updated national defence strategy. Mm. We're now on this sort of two-year cycle. First one was 2024, so this year, and the word on the street seems to be relatively early this year, they'll put out their next national defence strategy.
Well, before anything else changes, you know, if I was writing that, I want it published as soon as possible because things keep getting worse and I might have to pay attention to them in the draft.
Well, and it may be timed with the budget.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, some people have been saying, well, you know, there could be more money in the national defence strategy and in the budget. But you look at this and you go, well, they just ripped $1.5 billion out. If you're planning on increasing the defence budget, why would you take out $1.5 billion now only to put more money back in May?
That's right. It does not look like a coherent plan. So all the signals out of this additional estimates document on the defence budget is the Albanese government's holding the line and not increasing defence spending. In fact, they're decreasing it.
Well, okay. So first point is the budget is still going up. So when we're talking in nominal dollars, the money is still going up.
Yeah. Right? The rate of growth is being reduced.
Yes, it's not going up.
Their plan is being reduced.
Correct. It's when we talk about increase, it's always very important to say what are we comparing the increases to. Yeah. So the defence budget is still growing. It's just not growing at the same rate that was set out in the budget in May.
Yeah.
Now, the other way to look at defence spending, of course, is that old classic percentage of GDP.
Oh, come on, Marcus. You know, as Dickie says, I think even Richard Miles says this, percentages of GDP are completely misleading. It's an arbitrary figure, but what is it?
Except when the government uses it. Themselves.
Yes, except if it's...
So that sugar hit, so that bringing that $2 billion forward this year and the submarine money forward is a sugar hit this year. So, again, we're still talking predictions because we're not at the end of the financial year. Yeah. So the March budget this year was going to be 2.05%. That's gone up to 2.08%.
Oh, boy.
Unfortunately, next year's goes down.
Oh.
And 27.28 goes down. It actually goes down quite a lot. Goes down from a predicted 2.15% to 2.05%.
Mm.
Now, one of the things we've talked about quite a lot in this program is that the defence budget, despite the government's historic increases, it's been stuck in this band between 1.9% and 2.1%, so a tenth of a percent either side of 2% since 2017.
Yep.
You know,
so the share of national wealth...
And that's going to continue.
The actual share of national wealth going to defence is gloriously unchanged because it's just if the economy grows, then the defence budget grows with that.
Yeah, so the government's been saying, oh, we're going to grow to 2.33%. That doesn't occur until 2033-34. What these changes mean is that ramp-up is going to be even slower.
Well, you know what I expect with the National Defence Strategy and the May budget? We're going to get a unique revision of the definition of the defence budget. We're going to NATO-ify it and we'll magically get an increase to 3% without a single new dollar going, because it'll just be a new accounting treatment.
This
document
I would not
reinforces
be surprised.
That.
Now,
so I'm going to argue I should still clean up on my bed.
So now the big question is, what's that money going on? So, you know, this massive sugar hit, $2.5 billion roughly going into 2025-26, what's it being spent on? You will not be surprised to know, Michael, that despite there being 220-something pages in the PBS, it's really, really hard to work out what it's being spent on. So one thing we can say is going up. Have a guess.
I'm going to say AUKUS submarines, obviously.
There you go. Yep. So if we look at DEF 1, we need this big sort of echoey sound.
DEF 1.
DEF 1.
Yeah. Sort of Darth Vader-y.
So that's the submarine project.
Yeah.
So back in the March budget, its total predicted spend was... $3.3 billion, roughly. So $3,326 million.
This financial year.
Yeah. $3.3 billion,
right,
which seems to me like quite a lot of money considering we're still about 7 years away from getting an actual submarine. Yeah.
That's the opposite to the Christmas hamper, you know, send no money now, pay later. It's no, send all the money now.
It is the gift that keeps on taking.
Get the submarine later. Yeah.
The gift that keeps on taking. Yeah. Well, so if you thought it would be hard to spend $3.3 billion, you would be wrong, because actually they're aiming now to spend $3.9 billion.
Have they bought another suitcase? They might have doubled suitcase capacity.
Well, again, there's no detail on what the extra roughly $600 million is going on, other than sort of some throwaway lines about workforce mobilization and standing
workforce
up.
Workforce and industry mobilization.
Yeah.
I'm going to do more stuff, so I need more money, because I'm doing more stuff, that's why I need more money. You see, this standard of public transparency is what is giving so much confidence in the defense organization and in fact the broader government. They're at historic lows in revealing anything about what they're doing to the taxpayer.
Right, just because like the head of the Australian Submarine Agency was asked at Estimates not that long ago very basic questions about schedule and either couldn't answer them or refused to answer them, both in the testimony at the time and in the follow-up
written
responses. You're talking about lack of transparency.
What he is clear about is he needs even more public money.
He does.
Even earlier.
So
he's very clear on that.
So okay, part of the additional money seems to be going into the submarine program. Mm-hmm. We don't exactly know what for, other than workforce and industrial mobilization. But so it's going to hit nearly $4 billion. I will just point out...
Oh, my God. Nearly $4 billion. Here we are in 2026.
Yep.
On submarines, the first one of which, best case, doesn't appear till 2032.
Okay. I will just, as a bit of historical context, bit of trivia, the only other time an Australian defence project has passed $2 billion in spend in 1 year was the JSF program. Mm-hmm. And at the peak of the JSF program, when we were getting sort of roughly 15 aircraft delivered a year, it hit $2 billion for over the space of about 3 years.
So we're actually getting aircraft.
We're actually getting aircraft.
Yeah, so there is something different here.
And we're at the moment, we're getting workforce mobilisation, and Pete Hegseth is getting suitcases of cash.
Yeah, and, you know, it says preparedness and capability is why they're spending it earlier. But when I trawled through this extremely turgid document, I couldn't see any major increase in missile or inventory purchasing. In fact, the only references were to decreases from their plan, because they said, oh, they got some stuff last year. So there's no evidence that... the missile or munition stocks that Australia would need in a time of actual conflict are being built. And the urgency seems to have gone out of that. So I don't know where the rest of the money is going.
Well, I don't either. So here's the thing, okay? Even though this is meant to be a budget document, it's not a budget document in the sense that normal people understand it. So sort of a line-by-line breakdown of what you're going to be spending your money on. So we can sort of look at the... Again, a top-level category. So the
top 30 projects, maybe?
No. So if we look at the total capability acquisition program,
mm-hmm.
So if we look at the table up the front, the capability acquisition program, it's going up since the March budget by about $1.4 billion.
Okay.
And most of that is in military equipment. So the big chunks of military equipment, estate and infrastructure, ICT, and the miners. They're all going up a bit. But the biggest increase is in military equipment, about $1.1 billion. So then, Michael, yes, you would go, well, let's look at the top 30 table and see which individual projects are getting some of that goodness.
Because if there's $1.4 billion going in increased spending on military equipment, it must be in the top 30 projects, you would think.
Unfortunately, you can't see any evidence of it. In fact, 22 of those top 30 are actually spending less than they had estimated in the March budget. The big exception, of course, being the submarine program, but it's going up by 600. It's not absorbing all of that money. I think, so when I sort of look at it, the only place I can find that kind of money is in this sort of rather obscure technical line. Ooh. So if we go down to the bottom of the top 30 table, there is sort of an aggregated view there. And one of the lines is over-programming.
Oh, okay. So overprogramming, you know, usually defense project managers have a bigger appetite and ambition for what they're going to spend. And the more hard-headed people say, well, that's great, you got that plan. You can say you're going to spend $1 billion, but I know you're only going to spend $600 million, so that's what I'm going to fund you for.
Correct. So CASG, and the Capability Acquisition and Sustainment Group, and the Naval Shipbuilding and Sustainment Group, so their project managers basically thought they were going to spend about $8.4 billion.
Right.
Sort of defense has come along and said,
steady.
Yeah. Don't think so. Yeah. So they've applied a kind of margin of about $4.4 billion called overprogramming, saying, we think you're going to miss by $4.4 billion.
Yeah.
And so, which is about 25%. Mm. So, in a sense, they're pretty pessimistic about their ability to spend money. That was in the March budget. When we look at the PAES, what's fundamentally changed is that overprogramming margin. It's actually dropped to about $2.9 billion, or about a 16%.
This is incredible. This shows the vision that Dickie Miles and Paddy Conroy have about defence reform is already bearing fruit, and it hasn't even been put in place yet. Well, that historic reform that we'll see at some future time, forming a single defence delivery agency, it's already lit a fire under these people. This is terrific.
So what they're effectively saying is, yeah, we're gonna underperform, but we're not gonna underperform by as much as we thought we would.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now they think they're only going to underperform by $2.9 billion. So that underperformance gap is about $1.5 billion.
So
they're going to have
bringing forward is just project performance might get a bit more like what it should be.
Across the board, they think they're going to.
Okay.
That's about the only place I can find sort of money of the scale to match the bring forward.
It's
not in individual project lines. It's in that underperformance wedge where, yes, good, their performance has increased. If your performance is increased, it means you're going to be moving money through the system, so you actually need to find that money.
Now, there's just, we're pretty much out of time, and I know people got stuck on page 16 there with that important table that says, yes, $2 billion coming forward, plus 1.2 for the submarines, but $2.6 billion going out the back door. But there's a couple of other little rats and mice things, because I don't know about you, but when I think about the military, I think how many days are the Navy ships going to be able to be at sea? How many days are Air Force aircraft going to be in the air?
Mm-hmm.
And I just say there's some more bad news in this document around that. So Air Force is okay, but if you look across the fleet...
At flying hours,
and this is Table 31... way down in the document, page 49, so near, it's a border, you know, about 50 pages in the document. Hercules flying days are down, Globemaster flying days are down, Super Hornet, Growler and F-35, all less flying days than the original plan, so a reduction in Air Force flying hours.
I'll put the defence view here, though, which is if you don't need to be flying your planes, don't just go punching holes in the sky. So it's always a bit hard to know, are numbers down because they don't need to fly the days, or they can't fly the days because they haven't got enough pilots? So,
or they don't have the money. And correct. I suspect it's they don't have the money. So F-35... 11,500 was the plan in the March budget. It's down by 1,000 to 10,500. It's that kind of change.
So it's hard to know what's driving
that. But the more disturbing one, I think, is the Navy. So Navy deliverables, unit availability days. This is table 26 on page 45. Major combatants, so that's the major surface ships plus the submarines, the Collins submarines. In the March budget, the projected unit availability days were 3,126. Here we are with the AEs, it's down to 2,626. So what's that, about a 500-day
reduction? Michael, you were so negative. I'll give you a piece of good news. Okay, the Royal Navy, major navy for a long time, you know, the greatest
the
navy,
first global navy
in the world.
Yep.
We now have as many frigates as the Royal Navy. So the child has succeeded the parent. I know you're just going to say, well, that's because the Royal Navy has absolutely collapsed and is not even a shadow of its former self, but I'm taking the optimistic view. that we now have as many frigates as one of the great navies of the world.
This is very like the tagline from the 2000 Sydney Olympics. Remember that rousing song Andrew Denon had? As long as we beat, as long as we beat, as long as we beat New Zealand. So, yes, yes, the Royal Australian Navy now has more frigates than the collapsed Royal Navy. And the collapsed Royal Navy and the UK shipbuilding industry is our saviour for our Navy's collapse. So let me say I don't find that good news. But again, I would back in your point about the opacity and lack of proper information in this document. So, you know, the Navy's major combatants are doing 500 less days at sea. And the reason that we're given is it's due to variation of maintenance activities across Anzac-class frigates and delayed planned maintenance periods across Collins-class submarines. So the reduction is because of variations.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Well, and yes, doesn't tell you much, but again, delays in the Collins maintenance schedule. Again, we knew this already, but again, it does not breed confidence that our submarine capability is going to see us through the transition
from
where we are now to our future SSN capability.
So $4 billion out the door on AUKUS now, 2026. First submarine 2032 maybe, but the Collins is in a world of hurt right now.
Yep.
Now, one last little thing, I couldn't help but notice this. You were as outraged as I was. Page 229 of this additional estimates document. It's the glossary section.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see you read all the way through,
yep.
All 229 pages.
Well, 170 acronyms in the glossary.
Mm-hmm. There will be a test.
Yes, the Defence Organisation has misled Parliament.
Really?
I know that's a big claim, but it's there in black and white. And not only that, but they have offended His Royal Majesty, King Charles. There, in the glossary, is HMAS, with mm-hmm. the explanation, the outrageous explanation, that that term stands for Her Majesty's Australian Ships. Well, let me tell you.
I'm shocked.
Let me tell you, when Queen Elizabeth II died in September 22, that moment.
Sorry, the Queen died?
Yes. That moment, King Charles became our monarch, and HMAS transformed to His Majesty's Australian Ships. So here we are, 4 years on from that tragedy.
No quality control in defence anymore.
It's alarming. So I look forward to the correction, and I look forward to the apology rendered to His Majesty.
Tomorrow at Senate Estimates, a senator can raise this.
Well, you'd hope so. You'd hope,
attention it deserves.
You'd hope there's at least one senator in the Australian Parliament with the gumption to stand up and protect the honour of His Majesty. I would hope that.
All right. Now, if you've finished getting up, can climb down from your high dudgeon.
I'm very, very high up here.
I will just point out that the analysis that I use the term analysis loosely, but the analysis we've been talking about, we've written it up. It's in a piece on the SAA website. So some of the numbers are there. Where to find, to ground truth the numbers in the PAES.
Yes.
There's links there. So go to our website.
Yes, we've read the document, so you don't have to. Thanks, everybody.